Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples. Y'all know I am crunchy mama to the max, but when it comes to seasonal allergies, I don't play. I can't afford to. Y'all, I've had the worst seasonal allergies my entire life. I have missed out on so much of the spring because I've had to stay inside while people are outside having fun. I've gone on these amazing retreats and literally just looked out the window watching people have the most amazing time. Because my allergies can't do it. I am straight up, I just can't do it. My eyes get itchy and red and watery. I can't keep makeup on. My nose drips. My throat gets clogged up. And I'm telling y'all, my face swells. It gets itchy. I really, really need support and help when it comes to seasonal allergies. Luckily, for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so that you can breathe better. I am pregnant right now, so I'm not able to take it. So please, you guys, if you have seasonal allergies, for my sake, go get some and experience what it's like to breathe a little bit. I've taken Claritin D for so much of my life. When I'm not pregnant, I do take it. It's so, so helpful. Ready to live as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
Literally did a 6-month test post-grad of what my top career could be: flight attendant, florist, and bartender.
I feel like that's a little bit like Nicoletta should be a nanny and a dog watcher. You know what I mean?
Worst nightmare ever.
I think the cruelest things, and I put that in quotes, that totally. We do in our culture is we make 19-year-olds pick a major.
Oh, I'm so with you on this.
Because I don't know about y'all, but when I was 19, I was at the peak of my confidence, but the valley of my wisdom.
Yes.
What's up, y'all? Welcome back to another episode of Call Her Holy. I'm Laura Eldridge.
And I'm Nicoletta Bradley.
And today, we are joined by an actual superstar.
No, literally.
My mom texted you and told you to say that.
Our tallest podcast guest ever. We had to adjust the camera for his knees. Mr. Adam Tarnow.
I've been introduced a lot of ways, but the tallest podcast guest ever. That's the best.
Takes the cake. Yeah. Okay, you guys, Adam is, we actually met at Watermark.
Yeah.
In our Watermark days. I remember doing sermon prep with you. And
that's right.
I actually vividly remember a message that you did on finances.
Okay.
I've never forgotten this illustration. I've probably used it and given you credit.
That's great. That's fine.
That's how I roll.
I trust you.
But you used this illustration of a postman. Do you remember this?
I don't.
Okay, so it was like, I'll remind you.
Yeah.
It was so impactful.
I'll remind you of your talk.
I was probably 24, like 20, maybe 26. I don't know. But you used this illustration of a postman, like, delivering the mail.
Yeah.
And how crazy it would be if the postman just kept all the mail for himself.
Mm.
Like, he has a purpose. The purpose is to deliver the postage, like, where it's supposed to go.
Yeah.
And that's how we're to look at stewarding finances.
Yep.
Like, it's, they all have a purpose, you know, and they're meant to go places.
Yep.
But like, how crazy is it that we just hoard it all for ourselves?
That's it. So every time you see the postman out there, postwoman out there, that's a good reminder for all of us, right? That's our job as stewards.
I love it. So today we're going to talk about finances from the pro himself, hear a little bit of his story. And we are also going to hear about leadership because he's an actual pro at some of this stuff in the business world.
Yeah.
So you guys starting out your careers and navigating how to stand out in the business world. Adam has an incredible book on that called The Edge, and I'm going to let you tell us about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So The Edge was a book that I wrote with my buddy, David Morrison. It's called The Edge, How to Stand Out by Showing Your All In. So it was really written to like our 20 something self. This was something that we needed. This was the book we needed when we graduated from college, starting our career. It's written to any career minded individual out there. And just real quickly, the problem we see that we hope this book solves, there's this thing out there called employee engagement that a lot of businesses are freaking out about. And so employee engagement is basically a measurement of how all in somebody is at work, at like how emotionally committed are they at work. And so that number's been really low for like 30 years. Something in the neighborhood of around 30% of the workforce in America would say they're engaged.
So it's probably, it's like this idea of people just show up to do the 9-to-5 and then they do the minimum, you know, do the minimum and then peace out.
Which was, I think, was really well branded as quiet quitting or something like that. You
know,
100%. Like I'm just trying to get by with all of it. And so it's really interesting if you look at the literature that's out there talking about how to solve this employee engagement problem, because again, businesses are freaking out about it. usually everything is written to the bosses saying, hey, you're terrible and you need to get better if you want to engage people. But there's another way to look at it, which is, and I don't say this to be pessimistic or snarky, but the bar's never been lower to stand out in your career. Totally, it really has been. So if you think about 70% of your peers at work are probably not committed. And so David and I were trying to figure out, can you be all in at work without selling out, without sucking up, and without stabbing people in the back? And I think it's a resounding yes, you can. And it's pretty simple. So the edge is energy, diligence, growth, endurance, EDGE. So you bring a positive attitude every day. You're really diligent, really focus on your job and trying to be excellent at your job. Growth, you want to keep getting better. And then endurance, which is just the ability to handle the inevitable ups and downs that come with work. If you can do those four things, like watch out, your career is really going to take off and you're going to feel like you're in control of it. Because that's what I always wanted. I just wanted to feel like if I was leaving a place or going to a new place, I wanted to feel in control of my career in all the right ways. You know, I just wanted to feel like I was the one making the decisions. Yeah. And so I think those are four ways to go. And to
that's
do
really
that.
Good. Dang. You know, people ask us a lot about feeling purpose.
Yeah.
And they'll jump from job to job, just waiting on something to give them this sense of I'm doing something meaningful. I'm doing something that like makes me come alive.
Yep.
And the reality is when you start working in these ways, you're going to feel, something different.
Yeah. Yeah. When you start to own it.
Different.
Yeah. You start to own your own career and figure out where it is you want to go. I don't know if you all feel the same way, but I mean, what was so great about having two loving parents and going to a, you know, a decent high school and having the opportunity to go to college is I had a lot of adults telling me what to be when I grow up. And then about 25, 26, they stopped telling me what to be. And I kept looking for somebody to tell me, here's what you should be when you grow up. And I, you know, it was probably somewhere in my 30s where I realized nobody's going to tell me what to be. I got to figure it out. And that started a new journey, but there was a tremendous amount of meaning that came from that of just going, I'm not going to wait for mom and dad or, you know, this mentor to tell me who to be when I grow up. And it led me on a path to, you know, ultimately what I'm doing today professionally, which was completely different than what I got my career or my, got my degree in. But it's been a really meaningful and fun journey.
That's so good.
Okay. So then tell me this though, what would you say? Cause that I work with college girls and, or post-grad and a lot of them are hopping from one job to the next. Why?
Yeah.
Why are we seeing these stats lower than ever where 30% of people are actually engaged, 70% or not? What do you think is affecting that? Why are people hopping from job to job? They're not interested.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of reasons. The popular answer is to blame the organization.
Totally.
That's a very popular answer. So there are some really bad cultures, some really bad companies, some really bad teams. That certainly is a part of it. If I think about my story, it was really, I think this engagement crisis is primarily like a crisis of meaning. Like people don't know how to find meaning in their life.
Yes.
And potentially even to make it a little bit less deep and more simple, it's people are misemployed. And so that's a term I really like. My buddy Brian Ray, when I was living in Atlanta, shared that with me. So you can have unemployed, you can have fully employed, and then you can have misemployed.
What does that mean? And is it like in the wrong job?
Yeah. So you're basically doing the wrong role. And one of the jokes that I make often is one of the, I think the cruelest things, and I put that in quotes, that we do in our culture is we make 19-year-olds pick a major.
Oh, I'm so with you on this.
Because I don't know about y'all, but when I was 19, I was at the peak of my confidence, but the valley of my wisdom.
Yes. So
that was a terrible time to go, here's what I want to be. So if I think about how did I think about a job? I was looking at mountaintops.
Yes.
You know, like what kind of income do I want? What neighborhoods do I want to live in? What kind of notoriety? What title? And I'm telling you, I have never met somebody on a mountaintop whose job didn't look amazing. Like they all look amazing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if you're in the arts or if you're in the medical field, in the law field, in the accounting field, as a teacher, the top looks amazing to everyone. But really where true meaning is found is not what's at the top. It's the climb to get there.
Wow.
And what kind of problems do you like to solve? What role do you like to play? And to me, there was a big epiphany. Like I started my career as an accountant and I was a third generation accountant. My grandfather was an accountant. My dad was an accountant. My birthday is April 16th, which is the day after tax day. So it was kind of in the stars. So I started there and I was good at it and I enjoy math. And so there was a part of me that I had some skills in it, but it took me till about 35 for me to finally go, I'm a teacher. Yeah. I've been running from this role of teacher my whole life because I didn't think a teacher could make any money, mm-hmm. or I didn't know a way to be a teacher. And so when I finally started to realize, oh, that's the role I think I was designed to play, that's when the job hopping for me really slowed down. And so I think that was a long answer to your short question.
No, that's
but
good.
I think,
that's really good.
I think there is this journey that we have to go on to figure out what role do I like to play. So if somebody is job hopping, it's great that we can do that right now because unemployment's low. We live in America. Most of us do. You know, I'm sure most of your listeners live in America. There's lots of jobs. So you can do that. You can hop around. It's less taboo nowadays to do that. It doesn't look like a slight on your character to do that. I would just say just keep analyzing why you left and eliminate the blaming others. Like, what did you learn in that role about you in the role mm-hmm. you need to play? So what were the good days? What were the bad days? What problems did you like to solve? What meetings did you like to go to? What tasks, when they showed up on your to-do list, did you really like? Those are all clues. And you need to put those clues together because you're going to start to see a picture emerge of going, this is the role I think I need to be in. And so when you can really match that role, I see engagement go
way up. Is actually really helpful. So I think y'all like listen to that again, because that is such a great tool, asking those questions. And I'm sure you unpack this in your book.
Yeah.
What would you say the person who's just discontent? Like, because I feel like there can be this frustration of I deserve more. I should be treated this way. I should be making 100K right out of college, you know?
Yeah.
And don't tell me what to do.
Yeah.
So, like.
Well, if that's you, I would just say, congrats, you're human.
Okay.
Right? Fair. Very few people want to be led somewhere. We don't want bosses. We generally don't like work, you know, at times. There's so much that, because every, and I know you know this, like every story is so unique in those particular situations. But I think some of the patterns are. The only way I know how to attack it as a teacher is to study it. So just study, why is that discontentment there? Just asking those questions, processing those with your friends. This world that we live in now where you just get to compare yourself to everybody on social media, you know. And so if you're feeling discontent because of the story you're telling yourself about your friends and your peers, like, just let me just remind you, those stories are like, you're probably building up a story in your mind that is not reality. Wow. For most people. And so work's hard. There are good days and there's bad days. And so there's a lot of reasons, you know, with all that. But I will say that if I trust the Lord in the midst of my career, then if I do not have a title or if I do not have some money that I feel like I deserve, I have to go back and just go, Lord, I'm trusting your timing in the midst of all of this. If you wanted me in a different title, I would be in a different title. And so some of this is a good test of our patience and our trust in the Lord in the midst of that process.
Okay, but then what would you say to, because I also think the problem, though, is that we don't feel like we want to be here anymore,
right.
So we leave. Or a lot of college graduates, they're looking for their dream job. So what I'm hearing you say is, like, figure out who you are, find a job that you like. But a lot of times, once again, going back to college, you have no idea what you like. So when you graduate, and do you recommend just get a job, find one that pays the bills and see if you like it or not, and then quit? Because I've also heard people and pastors staying on stage and be like, you got to stay for a year. You got to show discipline. Our generation that we have right now has zero discipline, all based on feelings, all emotions. You don't like it for 1 minute, you're out.
Yeah.
We see that in dating. We see that in everything.
Yeah.
So what would you say around that?
Yeah, we
idea?
Probably need to wait a little bit before we move on.
Okay.
You know, so it's like, when we talk about dating, sometimes it's like, when do you have the conversation? I know we're going to get to this about finances. Like, when do I tell somebody that I'm seriously dating about my finances or about my past or something like that? So it's probably not on the first date.
Yeah.
So we can at least say that, like, not on the first date.
Yeah.
So the first bad day at work or the first bad week or even the first bad month, probably not the time to quit.
That's
so
good.
There is some endurance that we can start to build up in the midst of that. The only way I know how to make those decisions is I need somebody who's not me
so
to
good.
Help me process that. That's the only way I know how to make those, because I get so emotional with it. I am so prone to quit. So I will turn 49 next month, right? So I've been out of school for over 25 years.
Okay.
I am still so prone to quit.
Are you a 7
when things get hard?
On the Enneagram?
No, I'm a 5 and a 4.
Okay.
So, And so it's like, I need my wife to help talk me off that ledge. I need my friends to help me with that. And that is in a lot of things, you know, even if I'm like writing a blog for my website or something, and it's just like, oh, now it's hard. This is a dumb blog anyway, you know, and just there still is that part of me that is seeking not to excel. It's seeking to rest. And I need to fight that. Like sometimes I just need to go, listen, I don't need to find the easy way. I love Ryan Holiday's title of his book, that the obstacle is the way.
I need to read that. I've been seeing that recently.
Such a great reminder of when we face those obstacles, we just need to remind ourselves, this is the way.
Yeah.
If somebody can figure out a way to grow without it being hard, write that book and you will make millions. But I doubt that book is ever going to be written.
Yeah. Here's what I've been in different jobs, and I've been really fortunate to have favor. But I will tell you, the hardest job I ever had is the job that I'm the most thankful for, because that's the one that prepared me most for marriage.
Yep.
And it's the endurance piece. Mm-hmm. It's the respect piece, like learning how to lead under a boss who's young and learning all of his mistakes or her mistakes on me. You know what I mean? And all of his leadership lessons. It's so hard. I will say nothing has prepared me more for marriage than probably that.
Like being you're exactly in a job that was hard. Yeah. Yeah. And so just sticking out, like if somebody's in the midst of, like probably somebody's driving around right now going, but you don't know my boss. And I bet it's really hard.
Yeah.
If we run too early, we could be missing this great learning opportunity.
Yeah. And character and
this
development.
All of that. And so that's where, you know, most of the time I've had the opportunities to leave, I feel like I left at the right time. There's one role where I feel like maybe I was 12 months late leaving.
Okay. Uh-huh.
But listen, 12 months.
What's 1 year of your
What's
life?
One year? Right, really. So,
no, but I like that you said that you didn't figure out, hey, I'm a teacher until 35 and get comfortable with that.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people feel this pressure, and I felt it, especially being like childbearing age, where I think a lot of my like frustration in work is like, I have to do everything that I need to do before I start having kids.
That's right.
And for whatever reason, God was just like, no. And now you're in these circumstances that are so much harder to accomplish the things.
Yeah.
And now's when I'm choosing to bless those things.
Yep.
So you know it's me and it's not you.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
And I think a lot of women and men can get really prideful and be like, I deserve this role. Like, do you see my degree? I went to Harvard. I graduated with these honors. Like, I deserve this. Like, we don't deserve anything. And it's God's grace that gets you in these positions in the first place. And when you're talking, my mind went to, would you divorce your husband if things got hard?
Yeah.
Like, would you get divorced? Just, you know what I mean? Like, you need to push through, even when we think about dating relationships.
Yeah.
If you gave up on a relationship just because all of a sudden it was hard, you would never get married.
Yep.
But when you get to push through the hard in dating and relationships, that's how you one day end up walking down the altar. But
that's
we
right.
need to apply the same to our work life. Like, I know for me, gosh, people always ask, how did you get to where you are with Noble? I'm in the fitness industry. I want to do something like it. I'm like, I worked at Lululemon for a year after I graduated college.
Yeah.
And then I worked in the retail center of the spin studio that I eventually worked at because I broke my knee.
Yeah.
And it's like, you look at my past, it's not glamorous, but every single detail was so unique and so intentional of the Lord. I think that's a big one too, is that you in your pride don't trust the Lord and what he's doing in the unseen.
That's right.
And the story that changed my life, I'll never forget it. A woman from E! News came to speak at TCU when I was a freshman in college. Julian Rancic, I think she is. She was the announcer for E! News. And she goes, I wanted to be in Hollywood. She was the one that did all the Oscars for a while. She's not really on as much, but she was the really thin woman, tan, short hair. She was all over E! News if you watched it about 10 years ago.
That one. Yeah, all that one. Got
I posted
it
on Instagram. Oh, okay. You'll know if you know.
I was wondering who, and then you said that. Now
yeah,
I know.
Just kidding, and short hair.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah.
But she always said, I wanted to be in Hollywood. So when I graduated college, I moved to Hollywood, and I got a job in the mailroom.
Yeah. Mm.
And I worked at the bottom of this huge building, and I delivered mail. One day, they gave me a letter and said, take this to this address. And I figured out it was Leonardo DiCaprio's house. And I delivered mail to all the biggest stars. And eventually, a few years later, in the mailroom, someone was like, who are you? I've seen you be faithful in this job.
Yep.
She goes, I deliver the mail. And they go, what do you want to do? She goes, my dream is to be this. And it was all of a sudden her faithfulness got her to be one of the biggest announcers in E!
That's
News.
That's a great story.
And it changed my perspective of a lot of times you got to start in the mailroom.
Absolutely.
You got to start at the
That's
bottom
a great
of the barrel.
Illustration.
And
yeah.
you can't expect to get the best job. But also, if God wants you in this job, he's the one that builds the stage. He's Absolutely. The one that gets you in a role. But are you hopping from one job to the next because you're lazy, discontent, or you think you deserve better? Like, we have to also, when it comes to careers, in my opinion, and what I've seen from mine, and I'm sure you can speak to this too, is it really comes down to faithfulness. Like, mm-hmm. are you supposed to go or are you supposed to stay? I love how you said talk to community. But like, the Lord will tell you
for sure
if you're supposed to stay, even if it's the hardest job yep. of your entire life. If you're supposed to stay, God has more yep. that he wants to teach you in that role to prepare you for whatever he has next.
That's right.
But here's the difference. I think that like the faithfulness piece is not just showing up. It is the edge that you talked about, you
yes.
know, saying, hey, this doesn't feel like I'm making some eternal impact. But when you are bettering society, when you are contributing as a male lady, you know what I mean? Like you're yes. doing something meaningful. You're doing something
Absolutely.
Purposeful.
Yeah.
And like really finding that.
It's not contrary to your faith to be really great at your job. That's a great expression of your faith in the midst of all of that. And so, yeah, you know, I love what you're saying in the mailroom is the perfect example of all of it. And again, that's the analysis we need to go through, which is, well, I'll go back to like, what problem do you like to solve? So people will know, like they'll say, well, you've written a book, you have a podcast, you go speak places. I want that. And I always ask them going, do you want the trappings, the peak? Like the best part of my job is actually not doing this
yeah.
and standing in front of an audience, or the hardest part of my job is not that.
Yeah, not what you do the most.
That's right. The hardest part of my job is turning Netflix off and reading voraciously. The hardest yeah. part of my job is every time I get on an airplane, resisting the urge to just watch videos and actually opening up the next book and continuing to read. The hardest part of my job is wrestling with how to put content together. And if somebody tells me they love that grind, I go, great, I think you'd be an awesome teacher. I don't care how you are in front of people. We can work on all that, on how you are in front of people. But that's the life of a teacher,
yeah.
is reading and wrestling with ideas and writing a bunch of stuff that you crumble up and that nobody yeah. sees. If you like that life, then I think you'd be a great teacher. And like behind all the mountaintops that we see with people, there's always something there that nobody does see. And I think that's where you find your meaning.
That's good.
Is do you like that work? And that's what we need to start to analyze and start to figure out is what kind of real work like that do I like? That'll be a great clue.
Okay, before we move on to finances,
yeah.
on this topic, when would you say is a time to leave? Because a lot of people ask that. Like, when do I know yeah. it's time to leave my job?
Good question.
I think people are, like, they really do genuinely want to be faithful.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want to, a lot of people don't want to be that flippant 22-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, but they're like, there are some really unhealthy things. Or what would you say is the criteria for, like,
yeah, I think if there's a long season of where you don't feel like you can bring your best every day anymore, you don't feel like you've learned anything or you're learning anything, you don't feel like you're being developed anymore. A lot of people work for some smaller businesses that don't have a lot of levels
growth,
to go to
yeah.
and growth. And so there's a group of the population that would love that because they're not really growth minded. And I don't mean that in a negative way.
Yeah.
It's just like, hey, I just love this job and I'm fine being here. I'm thinking of my friends that have been third grade teachers for 25 years, right? Like, God bless them.
Yeah.
Like, that is amazing
yeah.
that they are wired that way to find the contentment and they still pursue excellence on like, I just want to be a better third grade teacher this
yeah.
year than I was last year,
great.
But I'm not looking to become the principal or I'm not looking to go join the school board and things like that. So I think if you feel like there's no more growth opportunities that are there, those would be some of the basics that I would think of okay. with all that. Again, it's always so different because
yeah.
there's so many people that will just go, they would answer yes. Here's my fear, Laura, with that is if I put out a list,
yeah.
everybody
yeah.
will answer yes. And really, if you sit down and talk to them, they're running from a relationship. They're running from a conversation they don't want to have.
See, yeah. even when you said the word development, I was like, have you fought for that? Have you asked for that? Because
That's
I
right.
think one thing that we miss in the workplace, and I saw this a lot when I started leading people, is like, oh, people don't know how to like vouch for themselves or like ask for what they need.
Yep.
People also don't know how to like you were saying, until about 26, people have told you what to do.
Yep.
And people expect that in the workplace.
Yep.
Like, I don't know what to do. How do I do that? Or what do I do?
Yeah.
You figure it out.
Yes.
That is the one mark of a good employee. Like,
yes.
can you figure it out? without asking me.
Yes.
Now you can ask for help, but like figure it out. Like yes. That's going to grow you.
Yep. We had to tell my boys that. We came up with a 3-letter acronym, FIO. And that was like during the pandemic when they were home all the time and they were like, we're bored. We don't know what to do. And I was like, FIO, figure it out. Just go something. So FIO is a great skill.
It's one of the biggest things that these like young people need to know to do because they become discontent or feel like I'm just incompetent and I'm, you know, no one's telling me what to do. That's why you get paid for this.
That's right.
Figure it out.
Yeah, that's part of it. And listen, I don't want to be like, oh, we're old and wise, and so let me just pat you on the head, young adult. No, this is part of becoming an adult.
Yes.
Like this is part of becoming an adult that they never told us about.
Exactly.
Was you just start to take ownership of your life exactly. in this way. And so it feels scary. It's hard. It can be disorienting. Yeah. I empathize with all of that, right? Yeah. I have been there. I have done that. But then you take a look back and you go, oh, that was just kind of growing up. It's just part of the process.
I love that. It's just part of the process. Like you being in a job you don't love, it's part of the process. Yes. You're growing and you're learning. I just think, gosh, I just have a hard time though because I have friends that have, for example, they went to nursing school. They became a nurse. And then a year after that, they're like, I don't want to be a nurse. So then they went to the medical sales side. And then they're like, I don't like that anymore. I'm going back to nursing. It's like this beep bopping around. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's just this tension though of like, when do you actually ever decide what you like? You know what I mean? And maybe it's to your point of they never actually did their homework of like, what did I like? What did I not like? Yep. All the things. But I think I can just struggle of like, maybe if you stayed more than 3 months, you might actually learn to like
that's right.
You know what I mean?
That's right. Yeah. We're getting technical here. Career coaches and getting some coaching some people to help you ask you those questions to help you. And I'm going to use a fancy accounting term here. Help you audit your experience.
Come on.
So was it?
It's like a counselor.
It really is in some ways, but it's not, like, well, let's go back to your dad, right? Let's talk about that
relationship. Drama.
Yeah. It's not that, but it's just as valuable to have somebody just go, hey, I want to ask you some questions. So what did you think about that? How did you feel? What things when they showed up on your to-do list? I mean, I really think the conversation, if I'm helping somebody navigate their career, it's like, tell me about your meetings and tell me about your to-do list.
Yeah, that's good.
What are those two things? Super practical. But when you can, let's start there. And those are filled with clues. What meetings do you really like being a part of? Because those are inevitable. And what things on your to-do list do you like to go after? You remember in college, like there were certain classes when I wrote down my homework I needed to do. It's like, I would go do those right away because those were fun or I was really interested in that. And those were clues, and they're clues in our professional life as well. So
okay, something's happening in my heart right now, so we're going to have to move on. I miss working so much.
You work?
Real quick.
Oh, I really do work, but I'm in such a different season where a lot of my work I do is behind the scenes. Like even my teaching is like, I'm staring at a camera. You know what I mean? It's not a lot of like live feedback. I love leading people and leading meetings and stuff like that. So I'm like, oh gosh, I got to move on before I start.
Can I say one thing before we dive on though?
Yeah.
Real quick, and then we can go into finances. Is I really want y'all to hear what Adam is saying is a lot of this comes down to identity. Mm. Like the Lord uniquely put these skill sets into you. Like I loved how you talked about how when you went to college, you really liked these classes. Well, I bet if you wrote down the classes you liked, I'd be like, abso-freaking-lutely not. Math, no. Science, absolutely never. But I've been doing just so much work on identity and the things, if you look back, God gives you signs from when you're a young age of things that he designed you to do. And so I have no doubt, Adam, that you were probably a really big leader even in third grade. And it's translated into being a leader at
49. It'll be 49, but 49. Thank you.
And so I think something that's really helped me is go back into your childhood. We see I love the story of David.
Yep.
Because what we see in David is that he was a shepherd boy. He was a poet at a young age, which then when he became king and he wrote even more poetry, like in the Psalms, it was because when he was literally slaying lions and bears, he was writing poetry at 13 in the field. And so a lot of times my encouragement to you is go back to what did you enjoy as a kid?
Yeah.
This is the number one question I ask girls that are struggling with. What do I do? I go, what could you talk about for hours?
That's great.
What could you talk about for hours on end and never get bored? For me, body image, fitness, food. I could sit here and do an 8-hour podcast and not blink an eye.
Yep.
And that's, but I also see that I loved to talk about this when I was in junior high.
Mm.
And God was showing me little God wings my whole life that are now playing a role into what I'm doing now. And so not only, talk to your career counselor. Pro tip, college is actually oftentimes supply career counseling for those who have graduated.
Yeah.
Reach out to your college. They might have career counseling like TCU. They have it for free for as long as you ever need.
Yep.
I went back, did a career test. They told me I should be a florist. Maybe don't go back to TCU. It was really, really painful. It was so, like, literally did a 6-month test post grad of what my top career could be: flight attendant, florist, and bartender. Whatever. Anyways,
I am so dead. Hold on. We need a moment for this because
there's a whole episode right there.
I feel like that's a little bit like Nicoletta should be a nanny and a dog watcher. You know what I mean?
Worst nightmare ever. Okay, let's just not talk about my florist potential salary because is probably the lowest of the low. But
what
we
is
are
your favorite flower? Do you have a favorite flower?
No, that's the thing.
Okay, you'd be a terrible florist.
Yeah, I'm like the pink ones, the white one, roses. I don't know, but I'm like, all I know is that I would not probably make a lot of money if I was a florist.
Now, we haven't spent a ton of time together, but you would be a pretty good flight attendant.
Oh, I actually
Southwest.
Do feel
like
I
she would fit the Southwest vibe. So.
See, he can tell that I'm a traveler. We love Adam.
Yes.
Let's freaking go.
That'd be great.
Laura, I want to hear your first question, though, for Adam on finances.
Okay,
y'all submitted. Because I feel like you have so much wisdom for us.
Yeah. This should be a 5-hour episode, which you guys would love. We have this whole debate on, should we do longer or shorter episodes? And the girls were literally like choking us saying, give us longer episodes or die.
And I'm all about short episodes. I want 35 to 45 minutes tops. And then on the retreat I threw, all these girls were like, we want longer. And we did this long poll. Longer wins.
Wow.
So welcome to our first 5-hour episode.
Okay. So a lot of girls are asking how to balance saving versus giving and spending. So basically like, I feel all this, like I'm supposed to do all these things with my money. How do I actually still save?
Yep. Yeah. So I like to think about this. There's really three things that you can do with money. Maybe there's more, but basically what most people want to do is they want to save consistently, give generously. And then there's some other things on there, like they may want to pay off their debt.
I was going to say shop continuously,
be the third one.
But that's what I was
shop continuously. So typically those are like the three that people want to do. And through a story that I'll tell here in a second, what I have found is most people have to pick two.
Okay.
Like if you really want to make some progress, you've got to pick two, and you probably can't do everything and feel like you're making progress. And so a little bit of my story. And I think this is important when we're talking about finances to know I'm not a trust fund person. Like I grew up in lower middle class in Manassas, Virginia. My parents did not go to college. My dad was really a statistic in that he had a pretty successful accounting career without a college degree.
Wow.
And so we always had shoes to wear. We always had clothes. We always had food. We always lived indoors. We always had working cars, which I know that's a big deal for a lot of people, maybe even listening, going, well, I didn't even have that. But there just wasn't a ton of excess. So I don't feel like I grew up in a lot of wealth. I financed going to college. My wife had a slightly different story. There was a little bit more financial stress in her childhood and in high school years. When we got married, we were sitting on $120,000 in student loan debt.
Wow.
And we knew about it before we got married. Like this wasn't something that came out on the honeymoon where it was like, oh, you know what? There was one conversation we forgot to have. And so we ignored it for the first 6 months of our marriage. And then after a while, we actually were sitting in church one day and one of the elders at our church was preaching on financial stewardship and talked about debt. And we drove home that day and said, we need to do something about it. And so here we were faced with, we want to pay off this debt. We want to be generous. We want to save. We want to go out to eat and go to the movies sometimes. We want to be able to buy clothes. Like, how do we do it all? And so we just had to make some choices. So that's where I get that from. It's just, I have noticed if you want to make progress in those areas, typically you got to pick either saving and giving or giving and debt or debt and saving, but it's really hard to do all the things you want to do. And so we need to get that out there that there's going to be some level. And that is the, and I don't want to get too technical here, but to live strategically, that's what it means to be strategic, is that you're saying no to something. As being strategic is not saying yes to everything. That's not a strategy.
Yeah.
And so to be strategic, you've got to say no to something. That means you're doing something on purpose and you've thought through it.
Yeah.
And so, so I would say, I don't even know if balance is really the right word to go after here. Like, how do I balance it all? It's like, no, just pick one or two things that you really want to make progress in. And go and do those. And so for my wife and I, when we were paying off debt, we decided to give and to pay off debt aggressively. which left out savings. And so that was the season when we were paying off all of our debt. We were not as aggressive with our savings. We got a little bit of money in the checking account in case we had a flat tire or something like that, a little quote emergency fund, way less than everybody would tell you to do. It was just enough to be comfortable so then we could start to make some progress. So
how did you guys decide that? Like, how did you guys make giving a priority versus, okay, that's going to go?
Well, I mean, we were taking God at his word. I love what Dave Ramsey said. He just says it so practically, that giving is the most fun you will ever have with money. Okay. So I read that the first time and I was like, whatever. He clearly hasn't been to North Park Mall, you know, like he hasn't been somewhere fun. And I grew up seeing money and spending it as fun. So I always equated joy with spending.
Okay.
And so this was a rewiring for me as well. So we just believed that what God said, that he loves a cheerful giver, that generosity is a tremendous amount. And I had enough experience. We were 28 and 27, 28 when we got married. So I had enough experience of giving to go, I really believe that generosity is the perfect transaction because I give, but I get. Mm. I get a joy. I get a fulfillment that can never be taken away. And so if I go buy a new suit, or if I buy a new pair of shoes, I get a temporary joy that'll eventually wear out. But generosity is a long-term joy that never goes away. And so we kind of were just like, we want that joy, as weird as that sounds.
That's
and I
really
understand
sweet.
There's some people that are going to go, I don't believe you. And I go, I get it. It's one of those things you got to taste and see that the Lord
exactly.
is good.
Exactly. Yeah. I think you just have to try it. And like giving sacrificially, that's such a good point, because even looking back at like Colby and myself, as we have like, I don't remember what we purchased a couple years
That's
ago,
right.
but I do remember the like little nudges that we looked at each other and we said, Venmo this person,
yep.
you know, or like, and it's
amazing.
So
it
cool.
is. Yeah. That's what I'm looking for when I go to the mall or I shop online. I'm looking for that feeling.
Yeah.
And it rarely comes from buying mm-hmm. something. It often comes from generosity.
That's so good.
Okay, so what would you say to the person who is like just perpetually shopping? I think some of it is unpacking like why.
Yeah.
But like, let's just open that can of worms for a second.
Yeah, I'm a spender.
Okay.
And so this is for me. If I analyze my own life, there is, Amazon Prime's 2-day shipping has gotten me to be addicted to the anticipation of a new thing arriving. That 2 days is kind of magical.
Yeah.
Because it's 2 days of positive anticipation. And you all would probably agree, anticipation is often the best part and the worst part of life.
Yeah,
you know,
I get that. Uh-huh.
If you're scared of something, anticipating it is the worst.
Yeah.
Because then you go through it and you're like, oh, that wasn't that bad. And then something fun, anticipating the vacation is often better than going on the vacation or something like that. And so, for me, it's like, am I bored right now? Am I just looking for a joy, like, is there just
a
dopamine hit? That's exactly what it is. So a lot of times my shopping or desire to spend will just be that. I'm surprised at how much it is. It's boredom. So there's boredom. There is, there was a great book that came out years ago that said, the title was All Marketers Are Liars. And it was written by a marketing insider. And what he was basically saying was this, is he basically said, if you watch commercials, they're not selling you a product, they're selling you a story. And so they are basically saying, if you buy this product, here's the story your life begins to tell. A great example of this is every BMW commercial doesn't really talk about the car and the engineering. Sometimes they do. But a lot of times it's this lifestyle that goes around it. And there was this one commercial that I used to show classes that I would teach on financial stewardship, and it showed like somebody, like all these sports. So somebody playing polo, somebody doing equestrian, somebody doing the butterfly stroke in an indoor pool, which is a very, like, even that it was the butterfly stroke, not the breaststroke, because butterfly is like, you have to be a real swimmer in this beautiful indoor pool to be able to do that. So they were basically saying in the house that the people lived in, like, hey, if you drive the BMW 3 Series, this is the type of story your life tells. And so I think sometimes the discontentment is I don't like the story my life is telling. Mm. So if I can get those shoes, that watch, these clothes, Sometimes we could even go into body. Like if I could get my body to look a particular way, then my life will tell a different story for guys and girls, I would imagine, with that. And so some of that was a big eye opener for me to go, am I bored right now and I'm just looking for the dopamine hit? Or am I discontent with the story my life's telling? Because if I'm discontent with the story, like I got to, that's a spiritual issue that I got to go think about in a different way.
That is really good.
So then what do you do? So how do you stop shopping? How do you, I feel like I know, so many friends are coming to mind, even like I'm coming to mind of like, man, when have I done that? Of just, I know friends that are really discontent in singleness.
Yeah.
And I go to their house and they've got boxes on shopping bags. And it's like, but how do you tell them to stop when they have a ton of money in the bank?
Yeah.
So technically they are giving.
Yeah.
They aren't in debt. And they have making a ton of money.
Yeah.
So what would you say?
Yeah. Well, first of all, they've got to want to make that change.
Fair.
Okay. So that is where if I go to Dave Ramsey's wisdom on this, so sometimes eliminating the credit cards can that. So going just to a cash system can be little things that you do to try to help that. Probably the best way I would think about this is if a guy was asking me how to stop looking at porn, would go, and we'll lean on what JP would say. He would talk about the CPR, right? Like you got to confess it. I don't know if I'm going to get the acronym right, but there was a repentance and there was a restricting of, R was the restricting access.
That's good.
And he would, talk about if a guy comes up to him after a sermon and is like, well, where do you look at porn? Well, I look at it on my phone. Well, where's your phone? It's in my pocket. Well, then you're not resisting it.
Yeah.
You're carrying it around with you right there. Yeah. So what are you doing to restrict access? So if you really want to change, you will do whatever you can to restrict access to it so that you're not pulled off sides by it. So
I think a lot of people listening, though, might say, like, it's kind of like a funny problem to have. You know, there are memes about, like, the second you get broken up with, and you look glam. Because you just got a new Gucci bag, or there are memes, whatever.
Yeah.
It's Friday, it's payday, So I think there are probably a lot of people who don't identify like this is actually a problem.
Yeah.
Or I'm trying to like fill a need that I don't like the story my life is telling,
Yeah, I like that. So if it's a problem, if you're going into debt and you can't pay off your credit cards or you're getting yourself in a worse financial position, now I would say that's kind of like, okay, we're probably at a problem stage there that we need to handle a little bit different. For the scenario you pitched where, like, listen, I give to the church, I'm saving, I'm in my 401k, I have just free cash, right? The cash is there, where it's more of a contentment issue. That would be, you'd probably try to solve that one a little bit differently if you want to. And that's where you would you got to get friends involved in that. Those are hard decisions to make on your own or changes to make on your own. One of the ways that I like, here's one, this is new for me. Okay. On how many times, what if I took some of those fun purchases and turned them into a reward rather than something I'm entitled to? Okay. So what I mean by that is I just picked up, I used this Apple Watch for a long time.
Yeah.
And I gave it to my son. I kind of got tired of it. I was doing something different. Gave it to my son. And then my son was not using it. So I just picked it back up. The battery's terrible. It's an old Series 4. I really want, it would be so easy for me just to go to the Apple website and buy the new Series 9 and just do that. But I'm like, well, what if I turned it into a reward? So what's something hard I can do for a season? And then I give myself a reward of buying that. And, assuming the cash flow is there and things like that. So that's kind of a half-picked idea, but there is something there.
Cool.
If we kind of turn some of that into, what if you and your friends memorized James chapter 1?
Yeah.
And then there was a reward. You go out and buy new handbags afterwards or whatever it is.
You're adding
in
the discipline piece.
Yes.
Because I think what, and here's what I've realized through different seasons financially, which we can talk about how Nicoletta called me cheap on a podcast. And I prefer this term, listen, I stand by this. I prefer the term good steward because I'm going to find the best deal. You know what I mean? I'm going to Google if there's a coupon for that, because if I can purchase the same thing for $10 less, that $10, I believe this strongly in my core, that can go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And so I think, but what we do is we train ourselves in a season where we have abundance to, for me, I mean, and this is where I got convicted with groceries, where it's just like, go to the most expensive grocery store and just put it in and don't look at it.
Yeah.
And when things change financially, it can be really jolting where you're like, I'm not used to, I don't know where all my money's going. Now all of a sudden I feel out of control.
Yep.
I feel stressed out constantly, which I think there are probably a lot of people listening to this podcast who feel really stressed. You know, finances bring so much stress where now you have to start considering these things. But I like how you just created a discipline in there where you're like, I'm, even though I have the means to do this, I'm not just going to be flippant and do it anyways, just because I can.
For sure.
What would you say to the person who's really stressed out about money right now?
Well, the money is stressful when I'm spending more than I have.
Yeah.
I mean, other than that, I'm not stressed about money. So I would say it's probably confusion about your financial situation is what's freaking you out about it. And so in the same way that I get nervous before I go speak somewhere, and the way I combat those nerves is to prepare, I think it's very similar with my finances. The more I'm on top of tracking where my money's going, the less stress I have. And so 2023 for Jackie and I, it was a stressful year for us. Okay. And it was stressful because I was not in our program that we use, YNAB. I was not in YNAB tracking our expenses nearly as much as I should be. Mm-hmm. And so what that did is it led to a lot of stress. So it didn't lead to a lot of guilt when we were spending during the month, but it led to a lot of stress at the end of the month of like, oh my gosh, how did that work? Like, do we really have enough in there and stuff like that? And so spending is so easy now with all the digital stuff. Yeah. I mean,
Apple Pay.
And I'm not telling everybody to go cash again, but there was something different about cash because you would physically feel the cash leaving you or now. And even the credit cards, again, sometimes good just to be aware, they've tricked us into believing spending is earning because we get all these points.
Yeah.
And so it's it just is so easy. So to me, I would say the stressed out person is like, okay, well, are you organized? Do you have a spending plan? Are you tracking your expenses? That's probably what's causing the stress.
Yeah.
And that's where I would start.
Okay. So what if they feel like, hey, I'm just trying to make ends meet, you know, rent is so expensive to live in a place where I don't feel like I'm going to get shot when I walk out the door.
That's right.
Or I have these student loans that I have to pay the minimum, you know, and I'm not living extravagantly. Would you say that to that person? Like, hey, maybe you do need to look for a different job
or
like
absolutely.
Consider a side hustle or something like that.
Yeah. And I like what you said, how, hey, I'm always looking for coupons and I like to try to spend as little money as possible. Cause I think sometimes in the church world, those that are definitely in the church world, we will believe that stewardship only means reducing expenses.
Yeah.
And that's a part of it at times, but it's not the full picture. A lot of couples that I meet with or individuals that I've met with that are in financial stress, the answer is not to reduce your expenses. The answer is you've got an income problem. Mm-hmm. And so that can be a real issue for some people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the fastest way. So two areas for expenses to make the most ground up is always going to be housing and transportation. Those are the two. Like if you have a Netflix account or you have an Audible account, like, listen, that's helpful. And it may be good to cut back on $15 here, $20 there. All that stuff adds up. But typically housing and transportation are where you can find hundreds of dollars a month. So if we're going to look at your expenses, I would look there. Third category would probably be eating out and just where you dine. But again, sometimes housing and transportation can be more. So are you paying for a new car or are you leasing a car? Maybe we need to sell that and buy a used car. Maybe you're living in this cool neighborhood. What if we just moved 10 miles away? We'd be in a different neighborhood. Yeah, it's not as cool, but you save $400 a month.
Yeah.
That can reduce some stress.
Yeah.
Or do we just need to look for a new job or a second job?
Yeah.
You know, things like that. Those are typically the levers to pull.
And I've seen people get roommates who, like, they want to live alone, but it's so expensive. Or it's like, literally, I've had girls live in the same bedroom, which is, you can kind of strip some of your dignity as an adult. You feel like I should be past this, but there comes a point where you have to, it's kind of like the porn thing. Like, okay, I'm going to remove access from my phone. Like you have to get creative and not in a frustrated, you know, way, but in a way that's like, God has given me enough for what I need.
Yeah.
Like, how can I
make
some decisions to do that
well? And let me empathize with the listeners here too. The last 4 years has been crazy, you know, with inflation and where everything is, like, that's real. And so housing costs in some areas of the country are through the roof. What it costs to own a car or to drive a car now, that can be really expensive as well. So If we could go back to one of the things we talked about in the beginning, like, I just want to remind you that something is being forged in your character right now. I read this the other day that Tim Elmore believes that Gen Z is probably going to be closer to the greatest generation, like our grandparents' generation. Like, they have more in common with that generation than with millennials or Gen Xers.
Oh,
and
wow.
A lot of it is because of some of these hard things that the culture has thrown their way that they're not in control of. And so I know it sucks that you may have to share a room with somebody, and that you may lose some dignity. But I also want to say is there's another story here, which is there's some character being forged.
Yes.
That for our culture, that we're going to need your leadership in a few years.
That's good.
It's going to be amazing that you have been through some hard things, and maybe some hard things financially, that your generation is going to make some different decisions than my generation did, or even maybe millennials did.
You know, talked about in Romans, like, consider it joy when you face trials of many kinds, because trials create character,
yeah,
and character hope, and it will not be put to shame. And
yeah,
so I think that's really cool, is like, these things are going to make you have more character. You,
yep,
being in debt and overcoming it is going to build character.
Yep.
I would love to hear your perspective. I think we often get a lot of DMs around girls that are single and thinking about marriage.
Yep.
And they're really embarrassed about their financial situation.
Yeah.
Do you feel like, I don't know, just do you say like, man, yeah, make sure you're out of debt before you start dating? How does a godly man view debt? And I would also pivot to say, I think the most shame often can come not necessarily from debt that comes from school, but debt that comes from poor decisions.
Yeah.
Like shopping.
Yeah.
Can I add something in that question?
Yeah,
too?
Go for it.
Because I think a lot of people also, like, you want a man who makes a lot of money.
Mm.
Call it how it is.
You know what I mean? Like, you just want to be, a lot of girls want to be taken care of.
Yeah.
And they think a lot of their problems financially are going to be solved once they get married.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
That's good.
We just threw a lot on your plate. You ready?
Yeah. How are you going to sift through that one?
Yeah. Well, it makes me think of the way David Marvin told my story with Jackie and I was, uh-huh, like, so I was a seminary student and I met my wife when we were dating, and she was an attorney. And I just had these visions in my mind of, like, this is exactly what happens when you follow God's will and you become a seminary student.
The Lord
is God.
He blesses you with a hot attorney wife. And so I thought sugar mama, right? That's what I literally, I didn't use those words. I thought sugar mama. Well, she decided to work at a nonprofit. So she was not making attorney money. So that when we had that financial conversation, it was like, I thought she was going to be sugar mama. She thought I was going to be sugar daddy. And we're like, we ain't got no sugar. There's no sugar here in this relationship.
We got mama and daddy, but no sugar.
That's right. That's exactly right. So, listen, the Lord did some really cool things. Jackie, I wish she was here because she could answer that question, mm-hmm, better, because she came in with more debt than me. And what I would say is, if you find a man who loves you and wants to be committed to you, he will quickly view that as our debt, not your debt.
Mm.
And so if there's a guy that's just like, you say, oh, I've got some debt for whatever reason, and he's like, oh, really? And he starts to treat you different, then that may not be the guy for you, because it's, yeah, such a small thing. Like,
yeah,
it is so not a deal breaker, I would say.
And it's changeable.
Yeah.
Like, I think a, yeah, lot of, just like you experienced where you thought this one thing, all of a sudden, it's actually not like that. You know,
yeah,
you could marry a man who has the best job and then he gets injured. And you're now,
yep,
your salary is like what's supporting,
sure,
you guys. I think we base a lot of things in our decision making on things that are like, they're going to change.
For
probably.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
One thing that really, as I had like gone through merge with different guys before Colby.
And merge is a premarital counseling.
We really need Colby. Yeah. We really need Colby in here. Cause I mean, the two of us have been through merge, the premarital counseling, I think like 6 times total, not with each other. I mean, maybe 5. Anyways, the amount of times that like we've considered, like, am I going to marry this person? Anyways, one thing that really stuck out to me is not necessarily where a guy's finances were, but how he approached them.
That's excellent.
So it was, yeah, like, I don't care if you have $200 in your bank account, but if you're looking at me saying, we're in a great spot, I,
yeah,
have $200 and I may or may not get paid next week, and this is going to be awesome. Like, something's going on there. You know what I mean? Like, just be sober minded about the,
yep,
situation and be like, hey, this isn't ideal, but let's work on this together.
Yep.
I'd be like, that's the kind of man I want to follow, because you're sober-minded, you're aware, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's what I cared more about. It wasn't about how much they had or how much they were chasing or what the potential was for their job, but like how they're going to view it. Like, am I still going to, you know, care about giving generously? Am I going to like be wise and not flippant?
Mm-hmm.
I really thought about things like, okay, are you paying $1,000 to share a room, paying someone else's mortgage when you... Like, have you considered that that's not the best option when you don't have that amount of money? Like, that kind of tells me, how are you going to be able to lead our family one mm-hmm. day? And so I think there are things behind just like, does he have a good job? Does he make a lot of money? Like, consider those.
Yep.
That's what I...
Does he have a plan? I mean, when Jackie and I sat down with one of the elders of our church before we got married to talk about our financial situation, I thought he was going to just give us this magic formula. And he just said, yeah, you just need a plan. Come up with a plan. And he was basically looking at me going, lead.
Yeah.
Just lead. Just come up with something. Think about the future. Come up with a plan. And so that's what I'm hearing when you're saying that. Yeah. It's like, does he have a plan? Then that's a great clue.
Yeah.
And I think something I've always heard, and this was really convicting, is someone had full eyes on your bank account, what would they say you worship?
Mm-hmm.
That's a big, I remember hearing that somewhere. I was like, dang, like, would it just say Amazon, North Park?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that a lot of women specifically feel just so insecure in this area because we never learned.
Yeah.
Like, I'll say that clearly. Like, my parents never taught me how to do finances. College never took a finance class because it wasn't your major. And so there is this insecurity. And so would love to hear some resources for women or men that you would say like, hey, next steps that could be tangible could be blank.
Yeah. So resources, there's a couple that come to mind. Like a tool that I find very helpful, and then they have a book that goes with it, is YNAB, YNAB.
Okay. I struggled so hard with YNAB.
Did you?
I could never figure out how to use it.
Okay. Did you? So
that's probably my bad for not looking into it.
Yeah. So it's called You Need a Budget. That's the tracking tool.
Okay.
And so then maybe what we should say here is a better principle is find a tracking tool that works for you.
Yeah.
Like Mint, right? Isn't that one?
Mint was just, I think they just went away. But there was like one that was out there for a while. So find some way to track, because you need to, what I loved about YNAB, what I learned from them, and I know you just quoted this before we hit record, was this idea of giving every dollar a job.
Yeah.
So making sure you think ahead of every dollar that's going to hit my bank account, where is that going to go this month? And making that decision before it hits your account rather than after it hits your account. So they have a book that goes with it that
YNAB does?
Yeah, that I found, talking about their four rules of money. I found that immensely practical, very helpful. So that's a good resource. Dave Ramsey, I mean, he's still out there talking about it. And listen, some people don't like what he says because they think he's a little too militant on the no credit cards and all that kind of stuff. 95% of what he says is not controversial and really, really helpful. And so I like him as a resource. And then, you know, asking your friends that you think are doing well. Just go, how do you think about money? How do you think about this? And so just opening up that conversation to learn some principles. I think those are a couple of resources that could be really helpful along the way.
That's good. So I think a very first practical step for somebody who's never really budgeted and so intimidating, start tracking your money.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you just like, if you like to write things out and you have time for that, like write it out, open up your credit card statement and start categorizing things of here are the top seven categories.
Yes.
Rent, bills, food, you know, groceries, eating out, spending, giving, gifts, you know, just create some categories and start tracking that, where you can have a picture of like, where is my money going?
Yep. And listen, if you've never done that before, I want to prepare you. The emotion you're going to feel is most likely negative.
Okay.
You're going to feel shock. You're going to feel depressed. You're going to feel anxious. And so I want you to not freak out.
Okay.
Because especially if you've never done this before, that's what you're going to feel. And kind of a silly story with this. I used to, when I led MoneyWise at our church, would have people do this for the first week. And this young lady came back in and she was like, I didn't realize I was paying $7 for a peanut butter and jelly sandwich every day. You know, and she talked about what she thought she was doing to save money, but using a credit card or a debit card and never seeing the actual number that popped up at the deli that was down in the basement of her office. And she was just like, I was picking the peanut butter and jelly because I thought that's the cheapest sandwich in the world. And come to find out, she was spending $7, which Now with inflation, that thing's probably $12, you know. And
that's
so
that's an expensive PB&J.
That very expensive PB&J. And but here's what it did. That negative emotion, that shock was true. It was truth.
Yeah.
And it motivated her.
That's good.
So she was like, so now I took $7 and went and bought the loaf of bread and got the jar of peanut butter and jelly. And so that just be prepared. You're probably gonna feel some negative emotion, but use that as fuel to go and do something about it.
And I know for me, I'll never forget this. It was first few years out of college, me and a girl gang got together and we just printed out all our bank statements and we made it a night. We got wine, we got snacks, and we budgeted.
You got some flowers.
So like do something,
that $3
wine. You could do something fun like that. That's if you're right. Like, that sounds miserable. Then grab a friend and do it with somebody else.
That's great self-leadership, Nico.
That is.
Well, I haven't done it in a couple of years, but you know, back
she's like, I haven't looked at a budget. My budget goes to fashion pass.
Yeah. When you said,
nah, they support me financially now.
Girl gang, that's not where I thought that was going. Right? We were going to look at our finances.
I have some little anecdotes that I think are probably pretty relatable to people to talk through. One of them being, like, I remember being in college and literally at Walmart. I went to school at Baylor in Waco. And, you know, you go to Walmart for groceries or HEB. And I remember every time I swipe that card, you're just holding your breath. Like, is this going to go
through? Your prayer
life
was really on fire at that moment, right? Yeah.
Jesus, take the wheel.
Is this going to go through? I've had other times in my life, which is probably why, like, I am, like, more attentive. I'm pretty attentive to, like, okay, I'm not going to be flippant with finance because I always had to be growing up. You know, we didn't have a ton of excess, similar to yours, provided for, but, like, we just didn't have excess. And I also remember studying abroad in Australia, which was a scholarship. You know, I applied for all the things, did my due diligence. And then I got to a point where I had been applying for all these different jobs while I'm studying abroad in Australia. And I ended up with $12 in my bank account. And this, like, if you know anything about Australia, it's $20 for a meal at McDonald's.
Yeah.
Like, you're not. Yeah. You're
it's
not.
So expensive.
Yes.
And so I remember getting on my knees and just crying out to the Lord, like, I need you to help me, Lord. I don't know what else to do. Rent is due this week. You paid rent weekly. Rent is due this week. I have to eat. Like, I just really need your help. And I'm going to sit here until you show up. And I will never forget waking up the next morning. Baylor emailed me and said, hey, we're giving you a $500 scholarship. It's being wired into your account. I had another email saying, we would like to offer you this job. And there was something powerful that happened in that moment that I think we exclude from finances is that I prayed. I looked
so good to
the author of finances, the one who is in charge of redistributing things and who has ultimate power.
That's so good.
There was a desperation that drove me to Jesus that I wish I had, like, you know, done before I was in a desperate place. So what would you say are some things that we could pray over our financial situation, over our giving, over our spending?
Yep.
What are some good prayer points?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you understand, so one of the words we've mentioned a few times, this idea of stewardship. So if you're going to summarize what the Bible says about money, it's this idea that God's the owner of everything.
Yeah.
And so we are stewards. And a steward is somebody who manages another person's resources according to the owner's vision and values. So that's our job.
Oh, we need to slow down and kind of do that because I think this is, like, groundbreaking for me. I think the first time I heard it was probably from you in MoneyWise, like money class at our church.
Yeah, so you see this in Chronicles and David when they were opening up the temple the first time, and he talked about all the resources are yours, God, and we want to use them for you. You see this in Psalm 24 as well, that the earth is the Lord's and everything in it, which means by way of implication that we are stewards. So it's not your house, it's not your clothes, it's not your car, it's not your money. So the thing to pray is it changes a lot of things because now income's not a scoreboard. It's a responsibility.
So good.
Really
and
good.
Spending is now, Lord, how do you want me to use your money? Generosity is not how much do you want me to give? It's more like, Lord, how much do you want me to keep? Because it's all yours. So that can start to inform all of your prayer life now of, Lord, help me to steward your funds well. Lord, I need to, you know, there was a flat tire. I need to fix the car. I need to fix something in the apartment. I need to fix something in the house. Just asking for help. And I love that. And this is the part that's harder to talk about, but it is important. Most people who are really living that stewardship life, they've got a story like yours where God showed up in a moment that if you tell that story to other people, they'll be like, well, you know, those are just circumstances. Like, that's just, that money was always coming to you. I'm glad that was a moment for you. I have mine when my first student loan payment was going to be due when I graduated from college, and I did not, and I just decided I was going to start giving to my church, and it was like, oh no, what have I done? Mm. Right? And then there was the surprise raise that came in. And the danger of telling some of these stories is somebody believing like God's just going to start, it's going to be magical. And all I'm saying is that when I see people who are sincerely trying to steward, there's some defining moment like that where they just go, all right, Lord, I'm going to trust you. And it sounds like for you, it was in Australia.
Yeah.
For me, it was sitting in the kitchen at my apartment in Atlanta going, all right, this is all yours. I'm going to trust you. And so I think those are some of the things to start praying as a steward, not as an owner.
Yeah, like helping me shift that mindset. Yeah. Like, God, how can I see everything as yours?
As yours.
I think that that really will impact the entitlement piece, mm-hmm. the frustration piece, the stress piece. And I think, I wish we could get into more stuff of like, how do we, because I think some of it is, how do you view God? Like, do you view God that he doesn't have enough to provide for you?
That's right.
Which is kind of my ditch of like, I don't have enough because I don't think you are enough, you know? I think digging down deep is like really, really worth it for some of those things.
Yeah.
But last question, just before we wrap it up, is what would you say for the single girl who is like, I actually don't want to just wait on a man to figure out my financial situation. What should I think about investing?
Mm. Yeah. So investing, I would say, is you have to earn the right to invest.
Okay.
Okay.
You're not entitled. Okay. To invest. So investing sounds like entertainment nowadays.
Okay.
Because it's all over.
Okay.
I would say investing should be one of the last things you do with money. So are you giving? First of all, is your spending in order? Are you giving? Do you have some money saved up for the future, like a little bit of an emergency fund? Then if you still have excess, then think about investing. And
okay.
So
I love it.
Yeah, that's what
Listen,
I
we actually want to ask you so many more questions, but we're just going to have you and Jackie back at some point.
It.
Like, yeah, I wish Jackie was here. We invited her and she wasn't able to. Jackie is his beautiful attorney bride.
baddie.
She's such a baddie. But anyways, thank you so much,
yeah,
Adam. I know there's
welcome.
So much wisdom.
Great
Where
questions.
Can people find you too? Where can they get your book?
Yeah. All so the book's things. On Amazon, The Edge, Adam Tarno, or you can go to adamtarno.com. Good ways to get in touch with me there.
Come on.
We love it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Holy Bye. Babes, we love you. If you want a place to spend your money in a giving way, we still need it. We got cameras who are overheating, which is why we can't keep asking questions. So Venmo @callherholy. We love you so much, and we'll talk to you soon.